Yo, Freedom Fiends. This is Mr. Michael Dean. How are the fiends today? Good? Good. Today our guest is Mr. Ben Stone of the Bad Quaker podcast.
Because hey, Michael.
Because NEMA could not get out of the work release program from the FEMA camps again. Yeah. What's up, Ben?
Hey, not much, Michael. How's it going there?
It's going good. It's sunny and cold here in Wyoming. Apparently, it's raining in Iran. That's what our chat room says. Yep.
Yeah.
We have a chat room if you want to go to freedomfiends.com. Over on the right, there's a big pink thing that says Fiends Chat. It's got a picture of a coffee cup. Drink some coffee, click on that, and come on in and chat. You can also call in on the Freedom Fiends Live at 307-215-5171 or Skype to username kittyfeet1. Ben just returned from walking the earth for many months and has come back from the desert and the wilderness with new information to save society. What do you got, Ben?
Well, there were talking coyotes and, and you know, mysterious...
Find your soulmate, Homer.
Yeah.
That one?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Follow the snake.
Tell us about it.
It was pretty nice, actually. We took off in December, and it was my goal to not shovel snow for the first time in like 17 years. Hmm. So we took off, and we chased ahead of an ice storm, took off down into Kentucky, then in Tennessee, then into Alabama, experienced the roads around Birmingham, Alabama, which I thought there was no place as bad as Dayton, Ohio. Turns out Birmingham is at least as bad as Dayton. But we stopped in Birmingham and stayed just south of Birmingham in a campground there for about a week. And I couldn't believe, for a big city, I couldn't believe how nice everybody was. I mean, everybody was just unbelievably nice.
Do you think it would have been like that if you were not white?
I think, oddly enough, well, we weren't in like inner city Birmingham or anything like that. We were on the outskirts, and it was very, you know, like, suburby type.
Yeah.
But there was...
I just ask because that's kind of the rumor of the South, that it's not friendly to non-whites. And I don't know that that's really that true anymore.
Well, in the area that we were at outside of Birmingham, there seemed to be a fairly even mix of races, even, Latino, everything seemed to be fairly well mixed. And you go into stores and things like that, and there didn't seem to be any racial pressures one way or the other. Now, when we got to Atlanta, and that was like 2 months later, Atlanta was a different story altogether. Atlanta is a place where, I would be happy if I never went back to Atlanta again. There was just hate oozing out of everybody's eyes.
Did Ted Turner run you out of town?
No.
the ancient lost city of Atlanta.
Yeah. Wow. It was unbelievable. We pulled over and went, you know, off the freeway, a couple stops, went here and there, grabbed gas, that kind of thing. And it was just this attitude
I got a sound effect for it. Hang on. Warriors, come out and play. Warriors, come out and play. I'm clinking silver and not soda bottles, but did you ever see the movie Warriors? I saw it for the first time last night.
No, I didn't. I haven't seen it.
It's kind of like Escape from New York, but a little bit better. It's a gang sci-fi kind of, not sci-fi, but kind of like post-apocalyptic, but in the now movie from the 80s about gangs in New York. And James Remar is in it. He's one of the warriors. And he's actually in my Hubert Selby movie, Hubert Selby Jr., It'll Be Better Tomorrow. He tells the story about how Selby had told him that at D-Day, Selby was there. Selby was part of the Merchant Marine. And he basically, his heroic contribution to World War II was hitting the beaches in France, running to a store, buying a bottle of liquor and drinking it and passing out on the sand and waking up with some officer standing over him after the battle going, "Are you alive? Get up." Yeah. James Remar is in James Remar is in Sex and the City. He plays one of the sexy middle-aged men, and he's also one of my favorite roles by him. He's kind of one of my favorite like that guy actors, and I've met him and hung out with him. He's but he's in Warriors, and he's really just psychotic in that movie, and he's like 18 or 20. But one of my favorite roles with him is, you ever see the movie Drugstore Cowboy?
No, I don't think I saw that one either.
Really? God, you're like, you're sitting in for Nima. You have to pretend to have never had any movies. Yeah,
movies. What are movies?
Drugstore Cowboy. It's a really good movie about some dope fiends that rob drugstores. James Remar plays a really bad cop in it who likes to kick in the door of the drug addicts and search them without a warrant and mess with their heads. Yeah.
Nice.
So anyway, how was your trip? I'm sorry, I interjected. I ejaculated my thoughts into the stream, as the
Catholic
say.
That's okay. It allowed me to clarify my thought, because I was trying to think of a town that reminded me of being in Atlanta.
I have the opposite effect on most people. That's why we're friends, because my random ejaculations don't harm you. They help you.
Yeah. They allow me to pause and let my brain catch up with my mouth.
There you go.
But the town that reminded me, that Atlanta reminded me, was Oakland. I know you've been around the Bay Area, and you can almost feel when you drive into Oakland that every eye looking at you is just dripping with hate. And it's you know, it's like white, black, Asian, Hispanic, it doesn't matter. They're looking at you like, you're not from here, and I want you dead.
Yeah, and Oakland is trying to rebrand itself as like a medical pot paradise. They have this neighborhood called Oaksterdam where they've got a bunch of medical pot dispensaries and like a non-accredited college on how to, which is fine, non-accredited, it's probably better, on how to grow good pot. And yeah, but you'll still get stabbed walking out of the door of the university. Oakland's horrible, man.
It's probably been 20 years since I've been to Oakland, so hopefully it's improved by now.
It's been about 10 years since I've been there, and it was horrible, and I doubt it's gotten better. And actually, I know it hasn't from news reports.
I was stunned, though, by the whole change. As you're coming out of Alabama and you're driving into Georgia, it's like, you know, the street, the road signs are like, hey, let's keep Alabama beautiful. You know, if you see a car off to the side, pull to the left if you have space. And that was kind of the attitude of the road signs. You get in Atlanta, it's like, litter, freeway, well, $1,500 fine.
I remember some, I guess, free market, or as we say, market, dealing with an unpleasant situation a few years back in Alabama. The local KKK did that program where, you know, they pay money to put up signs and say like garbage removal on this 4 miles taken care of. And it's, you know, usually the Boy Scouts or some church, and it was the Alabama Ku Klux Klan. And so people just like brought their home garbage in bags and just threw it in that section. That's the market,
man.
That's
wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was some really nice people in South Alabama, though. You get down. I had no idea that little strip of Alabama coast is so beautiful. It is just amazing down around Gulf Shore and down in there. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, did you do any work as a, I mean, you are an itinerant, i.e. homeless, but not homeless, not a bum. You're walking the earth, but you're a Quaker preacher, right?
Yeah, I am. I am actually, I hate to say it, but a licensed minister. Yeah.
Who licensed you?
Well, Quakers don't actually have, like, officially, I mean, they have ministers, but they'd like to say that they don't have ministers, even though they really do. So they don't really license ministers. So the licensing organization for me was called
Universal Life Church. Anyway, so wow. Somebody gave you a piece of paper, but did you do any, I don't know, do you preach? What do Quaker preachers do? And is it a preacher? Is that the right term?
No, they just have unofficial leadership, and then everybody's supposed to preach, or anybody who feels like it.
I'm a Quaker preacher then. We'll be back with more from Ben Stone on the Freedom Fiends radio show after these important messages.
Worms.
A science fiction comic adventure from Big Head Press. Quantum Vibe! It's year 2523. There are colonies on Venus, Mars, and Mercury. People travel in bubbles, fly at hyperspeed, with brain implants and artificial gravity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. Quantum Vibe! There's a robot girl and zany creatures made with genetically engineered features. And corporate villains crave the opportunity to steal a profit from mother's ingenuity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. QuantumVibe.com.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
If you like tranny hookers and shooting crocodile, tune in to freedomfiends.com.
Yo, yo, Freedom Fiends. This is Mr. Michael Dean, and today sitting in for Nima Vidotti is Mr. Ben Stone of Bad Quaker. How you doing, Ben?
Hey, Michael.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So we're going to not talk about politics today. That's the plan, right?
Sort of. You never know, though. I mean, we tend to wander into it.
We relapse into it. Well, I did an interview with you on the Anarchy Gumbo podcast at kittyfeet.com. It was your first back on firm ground interview. It was an hour after you woke up from your first night in your bed in 20 years. And one of the things we were talking about was why do anarchists talk about politics so much? And it reminds me of this meeting, AA meeting I used to go to in San Francisco that was called Atheists, Agnostics, and Anarchist Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the point was, AA talks a lot about God, and people who are atheists and agnostics have trouble recovering in those meetings usually. So they started their own meeting, and they weren't really anarchists. That was just the name to sound like badass and contrarian. But a lot of them were atheist and agnostic. But the interesting thing was, in that meeting, there was more talk about God than in the normal AA meetings. It was all like resentments about God. But it's like, I was thinking, like, we're atheists. I mean, we're not atheists. We're agnostics. We're political atheists, anarchists. Why do we talk about politics nonstop? I would think we should talk about everything but politics and just the wonders of the world and the joy of life instead of getting bogged down in all this tyranny. So
it's hard to do, though, because it seems like every time you take your mind off the tyranny, then some guy shows up at your front door and, you know, he's in a uniform and he's got a paper in his hand and you got to go to the court. And, oh, well, maybe that didn't happen to you.
When's the last time that happened to you? That hasn't happened to me ever, man. I mean, I've had run-ins with cops, but I don't know. Last time I had a run-in with a cop or any kind of authority figure was probably 3 years ago when we were filming the Guns and Weed movie, and we borrowed a 50 cal Barrett. Or 50 cal Armalite, I think, and we're out in the sticks shooting on state land, and a fish and hogs guy, you know, Wyoming Department of Fish and Game, we call them fish and hogs, or game and fish, because game's more important here, so it's game and fish. One of their, you know, official guys in his uniform drove up in his official tax eater truck and got out and kind of looked around, and then he's like, "Can I shoot it?" And we're like, sure. And we let him shoot it, and he got back in his truck and split. That was the last dealing I had with any kind of cop.
That's pretty funny. Most of my dealings with cops are on a positive level, because very often I'm on my motorcycle, and I've got the look that goes with it, and they, in many cases, they have a certain level of envy for that, and they want to, like, be your
free,
buddy.
Because you're free.
Yeah. And they always want to, like, be my buddy and talk to me and stuff. I rode without a motorcycle license in Ohio for like 17 years or something. Talked to cops on numerous bases. Not one ever asked me for my license.
And I'm not saying that cops are great and there's no tyranny in the world. I mean, I get reports hourly over the internet from the fiends. It comes across on the telex wire, you know, like, oh, tyranny in Chicago, tyranny in Utah. But yeah, I've been really lucky. Part of it is I don't leave the house a lot, but you leave the house a lot and you still don't run into it. And part of it's just kind of like, you kind of look like an older biker, but you kind of look mellow too. You don't look threatening, I think. Maybe it's part of it. I really think a lot of it is your look. You know, the book, You and the Police by Boston Tea Party, the first chapter, one of the things he says is like, have your car impeccable. You know, don't be a sovereign citizen punk and make your own license plates. You know, have your car registered, licensed, insured, all the lights and blinkers working on it. Don't have a bunch of bumper stickers with political slogans on them. Don't have a bunch of crap in the back seat. Have it clean. Have it look, you know, respectable. Have your hair cut short. Look like a respectable member of society. You're far less likely to get messed with by cops.
Yeah, actually, the last time that I really had a problem with a cop, I was in my son's car, which was
a bunch of punk rock stuff on the back.
Yeah, I did. It had a couple of like I can't remember, Rage Against the Machine or something like that stickers. All the windows were darkened. It's lowered. It's a Honda. It's got like a spoiler. It was, and this was years ago, but you know, because he's much older and mature and with a son now. But back at the time, this was probably this may have been 10 years ago. And so I was actually in his car going down to pick him up from work. And I pulled in front of the grocery store where he worked. And he's walking out of the doors of the grocery store towards the car to get into it. And a cop pulls up to my window and just kind of barks at me, keep it moving. You can't park here. And I'm like, dude, I'm not parking here. I'm picking him up. He's walking toward the car right there. You're gonna move that car or I'm going to write you up. I'm like, write me up. Do it, whatever. But he stopped not because he saw me. He stopped because of the car. He knew the car belonged to a kid. And once he had taken the position that he took, he wasn't going to back down no matter what.
That's how the government is, man. That's how they are. How they all are. How the governments all are. Yeah, there was this band in San Francisco. I was in a band called Bomb, which would probably get you in a lot of trouble now. Like, imagine, I used to fly in a plane with like an Anvil Road case that said Bomb on the side of it. Imagine trying to do that now. But there was this other band from San Francisco called RKL. It stood for Rich Kids on LSD. And their van looked like a moving, flashing neon sign that said, please bust us. It said, it was all graffitied. It had punk, like 50 punk rock stickers on the back of it. The license was way out of registration date. I think it was out of state from where they were too. And on both sides of it in giant graffiti letters, it said Rich Kids on LSD. And they got a lot more tickets than my band Bomb. My band Bomb had a blue, clean-looking Ford Econoline van with one bumper sticker, and it said, if it ain't country, it ain't music. Which I think is better camouflage than support your local police athletic league or whatever, you know, or, you know, dare to keep kids off drugs. Just, if it ain't country, it ain't music. Although it didn't really fit with the people in the front of it.
I had I don't know if you were into, if you have like a bug out bag and that kind of thing or not.
No comment.
Okay. I was playing around with the idea for a while and even kind of put the kit together and made several modifications of it because I was uncomfortable having a backpack in a vehicle where it was visible and having it look like it had any value to it. So my solution was to go get a kid's book bag that had, what's it called? The strawberry shortcake figures all over.
Dude, you'd look like a chimo with that.
And I put basically a bug out kit in it. And then in the outer pocket sticking out was like a crayon colored picture of the sun and sky and stuff like that. So here it is laying in the car. It looks like some little kid's backpack with a crayon coloring, you know, sticking out of it. But inside is like a pistol and a shaving kit. My bug out bags always have shaving kits and scissors and everything so that
literally your looks.
Yeah, I could vanish into a crowd tomorrow and my own family wouldn't.
You should have hair dye in there. So as Tom Waits said, you can dye your hair in the bathroom of a Texaco. I think that kid bug out stuff would only work as camouflage if you have a kid. It would look suspect if you don't have a kid. Or you could say, I'm looking for my kid, I guess. You know,
It was just to keep my windows from getting popped.
I used to walk around rich neighborhoods just because I liked them, you know, in L.A. And, like, I'd get stopped by neighborhood watch people, and I'd be like, oh, I'm the dog walker. I lost the dogs. That worked.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Anarchy Gumbo, Guns and Weed, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons. This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support, only a phone call away, 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
Freedom Fiends. Freedom Fiends would like to recommend the website creamyradioaudio.com, where you can learn how to do Cadillac sound, caviar sound, on a cat food budget. Here at the Freedom Fiends and Ben Stone, we all use the cutting edge of Serbo-Croatian technology to do our radio show, and it seems to work out okay. What are you using, Ben? What gear you got there?
The mic I'm talking to is a Shure Beta, was it 57A?
Yeah, it's the same thing I'm using.
Yeah, nice little mic.
Yeah, a lot of people think you need to buy a $500 RE20 Audio Technica, I think it is, whatever it is. But man, those are only used, they're really common in radio stations because they're very forgiving on people that don't have good mic technique, and radio stations tend to bring people in who've never been on radio and have them do an interview for one day and then chase them out. So, you know, those are good if you are interviewing lots of different people in the studio. But if you want a much cheaper mic, for about $130, you can get a good Shure Beta 57A, and they rock.
And you can get that by going to freedomfiends.com and hitting the Amazon button and then searching for it and buying it.
Or you can go to badquaker.com and go to the Amazon button and then go to Amazon and click search and check it out. Yeah. Yeah, I would also recommend with Shure microphones that you buy them from a company you've heard of. Like, you can do it through Amazon, but, you know, like Musician's Friend or one of those kind of big places, because they're a very commonly counterfeited item. So you don't want to buy a cheap knockoff. Yeah, 57. Someone's saying a 57 and a compressor, but I do have a compressor. I have the Prysonus Studio Channel Strip, which is $300, and there's links and a review, an audio review at creamyradioaudio.com. Ben doesn't need a compressor. Well, everyone needs a compressor, but Ben needs one less than most people because he's got such a consistent dynamic. He is a consistent anarchist with a consistent dynamic.
Thank you, Michael, but most of my mic skills have been taught to me by you. So we're just having a love fest here, complimenting each other.
big old two-man circle jerk. Oh, two old man circle jerk. Yeah.
Give me a little kiss, Michael.
That wasn't very radio-friendly, but we're not on that kind of radio yet. We're on the low-power kind of unregulated kind of radio. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But we can't. The radio that dare not speak its name on radio.
Besides that, the only way you can really joke around like that is if you're comfortable in your masculinity anyway.
The only way you can joke about FCC regulations is if you're comfortable in your masculinity. Give me a big sloppy kiss with that beard, Ben. Yeah.
So the organization I couldn't remember was the American Marriage Ministries, whatever organization. And that's who I'm ordained through. That was specifically so I could do weddings.
Yep. Someone's talking about how the federal government should issue audio gear stamps. so everybody can sound good while they criticize the government. So I'm going to talk about marriage. You're married, right?
I am married 33 years this year.
And you'd say you're happily married, right?
I'm not familiar with very many people that are more happily married.
Same thing with me. I'm married, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 years. I don't even keep track anymore. But I love my wife. I love being with her. I love hanging out with her. I did all my catting around years before I met her. So did she. And it was great. It was kind of like I got it out of my system, and not just, you know, banging lots of tranny hookers and cute, damaged females, but then shooting lots of drugs while I did it. But also just, you know, the desire to travel, the desire to do all sorts of things, the desire to go out dancing. I got that all out of my system. And there's really nowhere I'd rather be on a Friday or Saturday night than sitting in the same room with my wife while she reads a book and I play on a computer with stuff, talk to all my imaginary friends like you.
Yeah, my wife and I, you know, we went through some times that were very trying, and there were times when we really didn't like each other very much. But that was all, you know, it was temporary, it was situational, we worked through it, we just kept, you know, we stuck our nose to the grindstone and just worked our way through it, and we became, we were really close in the beginning, and through the trouble that we had, we became really, really good friends on top of, you know, loving each other and all that kind of mushy stuff.
Nice, nice. So, I want to read this letter that someone sent the fiends. I'm going to have you read it. Name redacted. Just call him some dude. Why don't you go ahead and read this?
Okay. Some dude says, what's the libertarian view on bank accounts in a marriage? Separate accounts, joint? Interesting question, since libertarians are so firm on property rights. Obviously, if both are working, each should pay half of the fixed expenses.
Yeah. I replied, and this is going to lead into our discussion of marriage and libertarian principles. Some dude, I think you're having a basic misunderstanding of what libertarianism is. Libertarianism is not every man for himself. Far from it. It's about voluntary cooperation rather than being forced to pay for other people. Without voluntary cooperation, you live on a rock. You live on an island. A good marriage is the ultimate voluntary cooperation. A good marriage is not the same as roommates, who can certainly say, you used 2 rolls of toilet paper to my 1, and you ate 3 of my cookies, you owe me money. While there's no reason a marriage ethically couldn't be like that, it probably wouldn't be a good marriage. There's also no reason an ethical and good marriage couldn't have a prenup, like say if one partner were a billionaire and the other were broke when the marriage began. But there's also no reason a good marriage can't include, a good and libertarian marriage can't include joint bank accounts and some ignoring of, you spent more than me, bickering. My wife and I have 2 joint bank accounts, one for her, one for home expenses and everything else, and have no non-joint accounts, and we both like it that way. In fact, yesterday we went and started a 3rd joint account, one for fiends-only transactions. We're doing that to save her the hassle of accounting all the little amounts coming in that we have coming and going. I'll take care of that from now on. It was starting to be a burden to her to do the accounting of it on top of managing the other 2 accounts, preparing our taxes, having a 9-to-5 job and a life. But we're making it a joint account because she is a fiend, the fiend behind the scene, and she does help out with our overall accounting. She's much better at that stuff than I am. And I don't mind doing things like scooping the cat poo, which she hates. And I actually like vacuuming for some reason, which she doesn't like. So it all works out. Voluntary division of labor is a basic tenet of libertarian cooperation and property rights. So, you know, and then he wrote, I wrote
Ooh,
that to
him.
And
in and out, Michael. Are you still there?
I'm there. I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
All right. So, and then he, you know, I wrote that to him and he wrote back and he said, well, yeah, I guess you can do anything that's unlibertarian as long as you both agree and it's okay. And I'm like, well, I don't think it's unlibertarian. I mean, to take it to an extreme that Stefan Molyneux would probably argue with, you know, I think that somebody could voluntarily agree with another person. You can keep me locked in a cage and starve me and beat me as long as I can leave anytime I want. That would be a libertarian arrangement, as distasteful as that is, and how, you know, I'd have no interest in that. But anything that adults who are in their right mind to agree with things, you know, to make contracts, can make a contract, and there's nothing unlibertarian about it, as long as it doesn't coerce any other person and no one's coerced into it. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And even if you think about it, something like a game of football or hockey or, you know, rugby or something.
Boxing.
Boxing, exactly, is a perfect example, is an extremely violent thing where people are pounding on each other's heads. And yet, it's entirely okay with the zero aggression principle and with libertarianism because it's not aggression. It's an agreed upon activity that two people are engaging in by choice. Or in the case of football, it's a situation where 22 people are ramming into each other, violently trying to break each other's joints and at the same time having a blast and doing it all voluntarily.
Or not necessarily trying to, but knowing that that could be an outcome. I mean, to take it to the logical extreme, we both agree that dueling should be legal and there's nothing unlibertarian about dueling.
Sure, absolutely.
Where the purpose is to grievously wound or hopefully or perhaps kill the other person, but two people are agreeing to be put themselves in that situation. We'll have more about dueling and marriage and how they're related to each other when we come back after selling some things in the voluntary market.
Worms.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies!
Jesus.
On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
Yo.
Where timing is everything.
Yeah. Somebody asked me recently about that music that's playing in the background on our show. It's, I'm going to find it here. It's my band, Right Arm of Wyoming, which has nothing to do with being right wing. Right Arm of the Free World is what they call the FN Foul Rifle. I'm posting the link to Right Arm of Wyoming's download, free download page in the Freedom Fiends chat room. So if anyone wants to go grab that, they can. It actually has singing, but these are instrumental versions of different cuts by Right Arm of Wyoming, which is my one-man band, my one-man punk rock band, which sounds pretty good. So marriage, man. Marriage, man. We were talking about a business deal with your wife on the break, and then we thought we were going out live, but we weren't.
Marriage. So, marriage is what brings us together today. That dream within a dream.
What is that from? Elmer Fudd?
That is close. It's from Princess
Pat
Bride.
Robinson. Oh, Elmer Fudd? Pat Robinson. Same thing.
Princess Bride.
Robinson.
An internet cult classic.
Yep. So, what do you think about this question we had about joint bank accounts? And I mean, I just think the person was unclear on the concept. And, you know, this is a teaching hospital. I'm not going to make fun of him. I'm not going to say his name. I think he kind of got it as soon as I started writing it. He's like, yeah, as soon as I posted that, I thought about what you said and then what before you wrote it back to me. But, you know, we're a teaching hospital here at the Freedom Fiends. So teach, Ben, Father, Rabbi.
I think a trap that a lot of libertarians and anarchists and people like that, you know, voluntarists and so forth, I think one trap that they fall into really easily, and I'm guilty myself at times, but it is almost the same trap that Ayn Rand fell into, where it's like, okay, we want to be individualists. Now, we're going to have to follow these strict rules with everything in our life in order to be an individualist. So you're going to have to dress like this to be an individualist, which is exactly like me. And you're going to have to smoke your cigarettes exactly like me with the same brand. And you're going to have to, you know, and all these things. And eventually, the Ayn Rand version of individualism meant you have to behave exactly as Ayn Rand. And it defeated the whole purpose of being an individual. And I think we all tend to be that way in certain ways. Like, you know, you have to, if you don't move to the Free State Project, then there must be something wrong with you. Or if you don't, if you don't go to Lou Rockwell's website, there must be something wrong with you. Or, you know, it becomes very cult-like in ways. And really, that's not what anarchism is about, and that's not what libertarianism is about.
Yeah, and Ayn Rand, I kind of don't dig her whole thing. I mean, her whole thing is like, it's so individual. And I understand and believe firmly that individual rights are the strongest rights and the most important rights. And, you know, if you say you believe in minority rights, you really should believe in individual rights, because the individual is the biggest minority. But her whole thing was taken to such a selfish outcome, to the point where, you know, I don't think she would disagree that private charities were a good thing, but I kind of got the feeling that she wouldn't touch one with a 10-foot writer's pole.
Yeah, she'd rather let somebody starve because they haven't done their good for themselves.
Yeah, where we know that private charity is very important, and we do a lot of it. I mean, I would say that my commitment to doing audio write-ups is almost charity. I used to do that for a living. I used to write books. A lot of people don't know I'm a published author. I have, I don't know, 8 or 10 books out, depending on how you want to look at it. You know, some are self-published, some were never printed on paper. Most of them are printed on paper. And, you know, one of them, $30 Film School, has sold about almost $2 million worth retail. And wow, that's no small thing. I don't get $2 million from that. I get a dollar from each one of that. So, but you know, that's pretty much how I pay my rent my rent back then and my mortgage now, is really from that one book and then from a bunch of side jobs I do. But I write tech books. I write these 500 page books that have tons of screenshots and tons of tutorials and basically product reviews. And I don't really do that anymore, partly because I really didn't like it. I mean, I liked doing it for about 8 years, and then it just kind of started to grate on me working with, they let me actually get away with a lot. I got to put some kind of philosophy and stuff in there, but wasn't anarchist yet, and was more about almost a socialist, like Occupy Wall Street, kind of like screw the man attitude. I was adamantly against copyright and talking about finding ways around, you know, paying for software and things like that, and taking that to the streets. Like, you know, one thing I said was, well, I'd never do this or recommend anything illegal, but I have a friend who wanted to film on a block of a city street. So he got some signs, you know, that said road closed, that he stole from another part of town and just hung up and blocked off the street and did it and filmed for 20 minutes and then ran away. And I actually once went into a Catholic church, a giant Catholic church in San Francisco, and filmed a scene with like 8 actors, one of them dressed as a priest. It was a Jewish guy playing a priest. And it was a scene from my first novel, where there was a young man going to the priest and saying he'd sold his soul to the devil. And we did it in a church, and got 3 takes of it before we got thrown out. So it was a lot of things like that you wouldn't normally find in a tech book, but there were a lot of, you know, how to use SoundForge, how to edit, how to do this, how to do that. And it got kind of in my blood. I got really good at it, and it got into my blood to the point where when I decided to stop doing it and the company stopped calling me because I was blogging about guns and how great they were, and they're kind of the companies I worked for were kind of lefty. You know, I found other ways to make money, but I still have it in my blood to need to write a tech tutorial every month or two. You know, I used to do it all day, every day, but now I do them with a liberty bent. Like, I'll do an example, you know, I'll use part of a podcast about anarchism as the audio example in the demonstration about why this particular tube amp compressor is good. So that's kind of my charity, and just, I guess, answering a lot of emails and talking to a lot of people. And I mean, I don't want to say it's charity, like I am doing such a favor to you people, because I'm also trying to build a business with it, but I kind of go above and beyond and just try to help people as much as possible. And I know you do a lot of stuff like that too. Do you want to talk about a lot of the things, some of the things, without tooting your own horn and, you know, being an egoist about it like I do? What kind of things do you do that don't pay or don't pay much to help the world, and why do you do them?
Well, badquaker.com is kind of that. But also, you know, like I do ads for people that I don't get any pay for because they're friends, or I believe in what they're doing, or I believe in their, you know, either their business or whatever. And then, you know, there's other things as well. If you go back to what Ludwig von Mises taught about why individuals act, why actions take place, why individuals choose to do things, and the core of it is, it all boils down to, we do things that we perceive are the best things for us. We do things for our own advantage, and that may sound selfish in a way, but really that's what charity really boils down to. You give time, or you give money, or you give goods or services or whatever to other people, ultimately because it makes you feel good. It's a selfish act in a very real way. Now, you might say, well, some people give because they believe maybe they'll go to heaven or something, or some people give because they think, well, maybe karma will return this. Someday I might be in a bad situation and the universe will return this back upon me. And so it's like buying insurance to give charity. And that's true, but that's still selfishness. And I'm saying there's nothing wrong with selfishness. Taking care of yourself is your number one natural tendency. And so even when we really sacrifice something from ourselves to give it to charity in some way, ultimately we're doing it so that we ourselves feel better. Because a lot of times you see really rich people who have taken something out of their wealth, you know, Bill Gates takes a huge amount of money and gives it to some charity that he really believes is going to do something good with it, whether they are or not. And of course, his reasoning in doing that is to alleviate his guilt of being so unbelievably rich with so little effort. But it doesn't matter what his moral position is on it, and it doesn't matter his motivation. The fact is, he feels better because he did it. And even though you look at the amount of the donation proportion to the amount of wealth he has, and you say, you know, if I spend a couple hours at the local animal shelter helping out, I've given more proportionately to my wealth than Bill Gates will give in his whole life. Well, that might be true, but that's not the point of it. So,
yeah,
you still with me, Michael?
I think when you do things for yourself, you do the most good, and it's the opposite of Soviet-style central planning, which is what we're in America headed toward right now. So we'll talk more about that after some voluntary buying and selling here on The Freedom Fiends with Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker.
Ugh, I'm so sick of looking at Steve's wedding pics, and I'm all out of passive-aggressive comments. What else am I supposed to do at work all day?
Sick of stalking your ex on Facebook?
Yeah!
Are you all out of cute cats and autocorrect mishaps to lolat?
Duh!
Freedom Fiends to the rescue! The Fiends now have a blog. Read all about the latest tyranny today. Dream about lip pair. Laugh while Western civilization collapses. Just click on the cat icon to the right of freedomfiends.com. Freedom Fiends blog. Read it!
Freedom Fiends.
The Onion News Network. I love onions.
Freedom Fiends, come out and play. Freedom Fiends, come out and play.
We are the Fiends. We are the Fiends. We are the, we are the, we are the Fiends. What's up there, man? Mr. Bad Quaker.
Some fiend was trying to call during the break, but I couldn't get to the little button to flip them on.
Well, because they should know that I pee-pee-kitty and pooplicate during the break. I don't sit here waiting for people to call during the break. They can call now, though. The call-in number is 307-215-5171 or Skype to username kittyfeet1. So people ask where Nima really is. Nima's not in a FEMA camp or a Nima camp. He's not camping with his family. Let's see, what else has he been doing in the past? He is not delivering pizzas. He's actually DJing at a Greek wedding and getting paid really well for it. And I don't think it's a big fat Greek wedding. It's just a Greek wedding. And he's trying to get more work doing that and less delivering pizzas. And I don't blame him because it pays better. It's more fun. It's more what he likes to do. And, you know, delivering pizzas, man, it's an unknown factor. I mean, you're going into different people's houses and it's dangerous. So
I had two armed robbery attempts delivering pizzas.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
One of them, Fiend.
You're on the air, Fiend. What's your name?
Hi, this is Miles.
Hey, Miles, what's on your mind today?
Well, I had a question partially directed at you, but mainly directed at Mad Quaker.
All right.
And the question is basically, have you ever noticed that in a lot of television shows, a lot of movies, they seem to have the same theme repeating over and over again? The big theme being that if you're a sociopath, that you just live the life of Riley.
Does the life of Riley mean everything goes good for you? I forget what that phrase means.
Yes. Forgot that that's not a commonly used phrase anymore.
I've definitely noticed, I'll take this first and then let Ben take it. I've definitely noticed that a lot of movies and TVs, I guess we'll just call them shows, that covers both. A lot of shows have repeating plots. Like, we were watching the Sci-Fi Channel today and we were like, okay, that's the brave scientist who's warning everybody that this disaster is coming and he's going to have a beautiful blonde daughter. Oh wait, there's the beautiful blonde daughter who's his assistant, and they're going to call the president, and the president's going to call out the army and they won't be able to fix it, and they'll try to help, but they'll sort of help, but then they'll need the scientist. And then there's a scene where the scientist runs to the computer and types furiously and saves the world from whatever the monster is. And that's the Sci-Fi Channel motif or script. And really, I mean, a lot of movies have what's called the hero's journey, which is I've talked at length about that. I could explain it. Basically, it's in the first 10 minutes you meet the hero, you meet and you find out what his problem is, and the rest of the movie is him trying to solve the problem. He's not yet brave enough or equipped to solve the problem. He meets an older person who is the mentor, who used to do what the guy's doing now. You know, if the hero is a scientist, he meets the older scientist. If the hero is a warrior, he meets the older warrior. If the hero is a golf pro, he meets an older golf pro. And the mentor is always handicapped in some way, usually alcoholic, but sometimes like physically, like he lost an arm in the war or something. And he can't fight the battles the way the young guy's trying to do it now. But he has information that he can give to the young guy that the young guy needs. And then the hero goes through some kind of training and trial by fire. And there's usually a montage with bad 80s rock music playing that shows him, you know, doing a bunch of sit-ups or typing furiously at the computer over and over and over. And he becomes, or, you know, Rocky running up the steps of the library. And then it culminates with the hero being ready to go into battle. In Rocky, it's the hero raising his hands up at the top of the library steps. So, that's act one. Act two is him going toward his battle in the innermost chamber. It's him usually physically, geographically traveling, but sometimes just spiritually traveling. And he basically has a bunch of small battles leading up to the battle with the total evil of his universe, whatever his universe is. And then in the third act, there's what's called the battle in the innermost chamber, which usually takes place in a chamber, like a courtroom if it's a legal drama, or a corral if it's a cowboy movie, or something that's physically sort of enclosed, where he's thrown into a pit, or Rocky in a boxing ring. You know, he's thrown into the pit with this nemesis and fights him. There's usually a place where the hero is dead. Like, the hero is knocked down. You think he's shot dead. They go to a commercial and they come back and you find out he's only shot in the shoulder, and he gets up and remembers what the mentor told him. It echoes in his head, and then he's able to slay the hero, the anti-hero. And then the last few minutes, the denouement, as it's called, I believe it's pronounced, is him returning to his normal society, but he's bringing some kind of new knowledge to help society. Oh, and I forgot, there's often a talisman. The mentor in the first act usually gives the hero, the young hero, a talisman, an actual physical thing, like a crystal or a ring or a spell or a USB hard drive.
Lightsaber.
Lightsaber. Yeah, something. And that's the hero's journey. And that goes way past before movies, but it's pretty much the plot of every movie ever made.
Certainly, but what I'm talking about is a lot more specific than that.
Sociopaths. Well, sociopaths are sexy because most people aren't sociopaths, and sociopaths are very interesting to people who aren't sociopaths and to the few that are. I mean, a real example is Fight Club. I mean, the main hero is a schizophrenic, dual personality, you know, guy who's making bombs and blowing things up. He is a sociopath. But he's far more interesting than what he starts out with, which is a guy who works in an insurance office typing reports. That's not very interesting. And most people do things like that. They have jobs where they do something boring and have a boss they don't like. And they'd love to go into their boss's office and beat themselves up and blame it on their boss and sue him. But they don't. So they live vicariously through the sociopaths in movies. That's my take on the whole thing. What do you think, Ben?
I think so, but you see this in comedy on televisions, all on television shows also. They you know, you get this guy who he's weird and quirky, but he's your main character. He's kind of goofy. He makes stupid decisions, but his wife is brilliant. A little grumpy, but his wife is brilliant. She saves him constantly, and they have, you know, wacky kids and the crazy neighbor, and the same. You have the same pattern, and they never really explain how these people have such a wonderful life and never, you know, stand in line at the DMV for 4 hours and then have to leave and come back tomorrow because they didn't have the right form. You know, they never go into that. They only
that
go
was,
into
that was something I really liked about Pulp Fiction. Like, in most movies, nothing happens that doesn't progress the plot. You know, it's kind of like a life condensed into 90 minutes, even if it only takes place over a few months' time, because most of what happens to people, even real heroes in their life, is really boring. You know, you don't want to show them standing in line at the DMV, which I really liked in Pulp Fiction. And you and I have talked about this, Ben, off, you know, just on the phone in, during the day. You know, that whole conversation about the quarter pounder with cheese, there's no reason for that to be in there other than that's the kind of stuff people do when they're not busy being heroes or anti-heroes.
Yeah, there were several moments in that movie that were like that.
Yeah, and it like, kind of, he kind of, it was such a success that it's kind of been imitated not nearly as well usually in a lot of other shows.
The thing I was talking about, though, was something quite a bit more specific than these, obviously, you know, major elements and major plot points of all these different stories, is that one of the things I'm noticing more and more, especially in television, is that they keep making these stories where the quote-unquote villain of the piece is some guy usually incredibly mysterious, totally evil, and he has somehow been able to accumulate an army of sociopaths who are not just willing to kill for him, frequently in ridiculously over-the-top, gruesome fashion, but willing to die for him.
Yeah, well, we're going to a break here. Let's keep you on, and we'll talk more about when we get back. All right?
Okay.
Worms.
We're not saying the Freedom Fiends are the one true path to anarchist liberation, but it's a good one. If you want to put your voluntarist money where your mouth is, consider making a donation to the Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post. Then make a one-time gift via PayPal or set up a monthly contribution of as little as $3. Giving to the Freedom Fiends helps advance education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. The Freedom Fiends. We work hard, so send us some money.
Freedom Fiends. Yo.
Hey, Ben.
Chomping on liberty.
Noam Chomskying on liberty. So, we lost our caller, but I got his question over the break. I can answer it. I think he mumble or Skype cut him off, but yeah, you get what you pay for. So Skype, it's okay, but it doesn't always hold you securely like the fiends do. So basically he was talking about how there's sociopaths in shows, TV and movies, and I kind of think the government's behind it, because a lot of times the heroes are kind of sociopathic, and there's this whole slate of new shows that are goon shows, like, you know, Federal Police, Alaska Wilderness Patrol, you know, there's one that's like Native American, like Indian Lands Police, Federal Police. There's a lot of them that are like not just cops anymore, but they're basically bureaucrats with guns doing their adventures and enforcing the law. And there are a lot of them are pretty sociopathic. And I don't know. I don't think that was his question. He was talking about non-government heroes or anti-heroes. But I really think that the government is behind all that, because, you know, they're made in conjunction with the government. At least, if nothing else, it's a win-win situation for the producers and the government. The government gets painted in a good light, being goons, and the producers get, you know, action-oriented things with people moving quickly and pointing guns without having to pay anything. And they get access to, you know, ride-alongs and things like that, and probably some tax write-offs. So what do you think, Ben?
I would agree. I think a lot of it's laziness, too, on the part of the writers and the producers and so forth, because it's always easy just to take something that somebody else is doing and is successful with it, give it a slight twist, and just redo it again. Television, that's, I mean, they've been playing the Lucy show in, you know, 300 different variations of the Lucy show and calling it everything else in the world. They've been doing that since the 50s. So I think a lot of it also, in addition to what you said, is just pure laziness. It's easier just to take, you know, a cartoonish villain and surround him with, you know, dupes and have them all, you know, totally follow his will and do his bidding for him. And then Batman jumps in, pow, zap,
yeah,
zing.
I was thinking Batman. And they're always, which I think goes back to the 50s shows like the Edward G. Robinson and the, even earlier than that, like the radio shows in the 30s, where the heroes were prohibitionists and being government thugs and taking down, you know, major gangsters who, you know, other than they were killing a lot of people and they were bad guys, but they were taking them down for like tax evasion and, you know, alcohol manufacturing and basically doing things the government didn't want you to do because they wanted to tax it and they wanted to collect taxes on things that were illegal. And that's a whole nother story. But, you know, basically in a lot of those, and this is parodied really well in Batman, like where you have the thugs, you know, you have the criminal mastermind and then his thugs are wearing like turtleneck sweaters that say like thug one, thug two, and thug three. And they're not characters. They don't have lines, or they have very few lines. They're just kind of a mass of an army. And you have no idea of how he got these villains to be his villains. Another good example is Demolition Man, the movie that my face is in for some reason. Sandra Bullock's character's wall in a bomb poster. But one of my favorite movies, regardless, I'd love it even if I wasn't in it. That movie has, you know, the villain is thawed out from cryostasis, from cryo prison, and he immediately thaws a bunch of other thugs and creates a gang. And one of them is played by Jesse Ventura, which is pretty cool. But, you know, it's pretty easy to explain how he would get their loyalty. He took them out of being ice cubes and said, all right, welcome to the future where no one has guns but us. It's great.
Yeah. And it's easy to write something like that and put it all together and sell it to the public. Also, because the public is sort of expecting, the public likes to always be handed a very similar tasting hamburger from the same place that they always go to, even if they know it's crap.
And there's things in media that work because of nature, and there's things that work because of repetition. Like an example, most popular music is in 4-4 with the, you know, the stressed beat on the 1 and the 4. That's because that's what your heartbeat is. You know, everybody's walking around with a 4-4 beat. And when you walk, you know, it's 2-4, but it's still, it's that kind of beat. Like, there's not a lot of pop music that's in, you know, 7:16 or 9:16. What is it, that Genesis part? Apocalypse in 9:16. I could barely even count that, let alone play it. But 4-4 is the beat of life. And that's the reason a lot of music is in 4-4 or 2-4. And if it's not, it's in 3-4, which is a waltz, which is basically the beat of one person leaning on another person's shoulder and dancing and swaying back and forth. 1-2-3, 2-2-3, 3-3-3. So a lot of the beats in music are based on nature. Now, a lot of the things, like the hero's journey, a lot of that is probably based on what people innately want to see out of life. They want to see a hero, which is an ordinary person rising to the level of God, of a God, by doing something extremely hard and risking his life for people he doesn't know. I mean, that is something that resonates throughout history. But a lot of the other things, like, you know, why does it have to be a scientist with a hot young blonde daughter? That's not, maybe that's something that people innately want, but I don't know. I really don't think people innately want a government thug, a bureaucrat with a badge to chase down people who aren't committing any real crimes, but that has spread because of repetition.
Yeah. Yeah, mind washing. So what was the beat then for the Who's Happy Jack?
Happy Jack. Dun, 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 dun. I'm thinking of a Pink Floyd song. I'm thinking of Arnold Lane. Sing Happy Jack for me. I just saw Quadrophenia and it's in there, but isn't it? No, it's in Tommy, right?
Might have been before that. Okay, I have a horrible singing voice, but Happy Jack wasn't tall, but he wasn't fat. He lived in the sand by the Isle of Lap. I probably got the wrong words there.
I would say that melody, I don't know about the rhythm, but the rhythm is that in that is really incessant. It's like Happy Jack was a man, but he wasn't. Which is just kind of like you tapping your hand on your knee. You know, that's a natural rhythm. But the melody in that to me seems like a variation on the Natural Children song. Do you know what the Natural Children song is?
I have an idea from the title, but I'm uneducated. Oh, okay.
It's called the anthropological term for that melody for is the Natural Children's Song, and that is called that because people in all civilizations, no matter how little contact they've had with other civilizations, children sing that melody or a variation of it. It's basically something that is in the heart of all children. And wow. it's not always to taunt. It can be done lighthearted. Like if a child just never hears any outside music and starts to hum and sing as kids do when they get, you know, 3 or 4, they come up with that melody. It's in your soul, man.
That is cool.
So I think that's the answer for Happy Jack.
Happy Natural Jack, law music.
Yeah.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Freedom Fiends. Ben.
Worms.
We're talking about the Natural Squirrel song. So DJ and I were watching, during the break, we were watching squirrels copulate in the backyard. It must be springtime. It feels like it here today. But we saw two squirrels like chasing each other. It's really comical. They roll and they kind of become like a ball and roll. And then they do it for like 2 seconds. And then run to the opposite end of the yard. And then within about 20 seconds, they're back chasing each other's tails and copulating for another 3 seconds. And then they run away. And they do that all afternoon. It's awesome.
Well, isn't that how you do it? I thought that's how everybody
did. We're getting ready for radio here, man. You got to turn up a tiny bit, Ben. But I may have made up the Natural Children song, that phrase and explanation. I swore it was something I heard about, but I guess this is what Wikipedia would call original research. Because when you search the natural children song in quotes on Google, the first things that come up, and pretty much the only thing that comes up that's really talking about that is my book, $30 Music School on Amazon Books. So, yeah, I guess I made that up, man.
Maybe not though, because there's several things that I distinctly remember finding in research back in the olden days in libraries that I have not been able to find on the internet.
Like what?
There's one major thing that people have questioned me about, and it completely leaves my mind right now. But it's very, you know, it's very foundational to some of the things I believe, and I search and can't find it.
Hmm.
And then I forget what I'm searching for 3 weeks, and then somebody writes me an email and says, "You said this once. What do you mean? How, I can't find that." And then I go back into searching again for it.
Hmm.
I think it's the government.
I think it is. Yeah. I blame the government. Do you blame the government?
For everything, of course. It's the root of all evil.
You know, one of my goals when I was younger was to have my book in libraries. And it was just a real goal of mine, because I liked libraries and I liked books, and they seemed like, you know, this is before the internet. I was interested in radio and books when I was young. And libraries were kind of a sanctuary for me. You know, when I would leave, I lived two blocks from a really nice library, and it was a largely a privately funded library, which is cool. The Patterson Library in Westfield, New York. And I would go spend all my time there. And it was an excuse to leave the house that was always valid. I'm going to the library. And my parents liked it. And actually, when I started smoking weed, I would say, "I'm going to the library." I'd go to the library. I'd meet my friends in the woods behind the library and smoke weed, and then go back in the library. The kids didn't come back in the library with me, but I would go back in the library and read and imagine being a writer someday. And books had this totemistic feel to me. Like, when I held a book, I felt like I was connected to the universe, connected to the sky, connected to God, connected to the people of the world and the ages. Because I knew that, like, some of the books I was reading were by people who were no longer alive, but their words lived on. And I always had a desire to do that, and I kind of mastered it. I mean, I never wrote the Great American Novel. Well, I did, but I had to self-publish it. And that was before there was on-demand publishing. I actually went to a printer and paid $4,000 to have them print 1,000 copies. But, you know, I got books published on major publishers that were how-to books. And they're in, like, 2,000 libraries worldwide. And whatever, tax eaters, you know, whatever. But they're in libraries. They're in college libraries. They're in public libraries. They're in private libraries. And we can actually search that fact on on Google Books, on the WorldCat, which is the World Library Cataloging System. And I dig it. But what I've really always wanted to do was to do radio, because it had more immediacy than books. And as someone who kind of mastered writing books and did a lot more with it than a lot of people who were like, "I want to be a writer. How do I become a writer?" And my advice is always, well, if you have to ask, you'll never know, because writers write. Writers write every day. I wrote prose every day from the time I could hold a pencil and knew the alphabet, which was younger than most people. Like, I could read pretty well by five. I remember in kindergarten picking up Dick and Jane and reading it out loud to the class, and like almost getting beat up by it. I mean, you don't really get beat up in kindergarten, but they were like, "Snob," you know, or whatever they said. Like, they just gave me an attitude, like teacher's pet, you know, because I could read. And my mother taught me to read. I didn't need school.
My grandmother taught me to read before I went into school.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very awkward. And I'd learned all my adding, subtraction, all that good stuff before kindergarten. And then I got there and I had to take a step backwards because they weren't even teaching it. I don't think we got into that until well into first or second grade.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Westfield, New York. Now, you and I have probably talked about your growing up in Westfield, New York, I don't know, dozens of times. And I never actually went on the map to see where it is. As it turns out, I've driven through Westfield, New York.
I camp
nearby there.
Sorry. Where?
Very near there, just south of, you know, the freeway goes through near there. And I camp just south of there. I believe it's the same exit.
I'm looking at the WorldCat for Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. It's in four libraries. It's in the University of Las Vegas Law Library, which is kind of interesting, which I like because it does talk a lot about constitutional issues and it should be in a law library. It's in the Downers Grove, Illinois Public Library. It's in the Evanston, Illinois Northwestern University Library and the University of Alaska at Fairbanks Elmer E. Rasmussen Library. I like that it's in two public libraries in Illinois. They need it, man. They really do.
Oh, by the way, I got that backwards. Westfield is on the south side of the freeway, and I camped on the north side.
Wait, the north side of the freeway, like by Lake Erie?
Correct.
Well, Westfield Township goes to the shore of the lake, but I think there's a place down there called Barcelona after the and it's nothing like the place in Spain, but it wants to be. Was it Barcelona?
Yeah, in Spain. Actually, I laughed because are you familiar with the Faulty Towers, which was one of the Monty Python people's later projects?
Yes.
One of the servants, every time he'd make a mistake, this excuse would be, he's from Barcelona.
Somebody from Westfield in the chat room, my buddy who's from Westfield, who I didn't know when I lived there, but we become friends and we talk on the phone sometimes, is complaining about what we're saying about Westfield. That's pretty funny. Come on, man. It was great. It was a nice place to live and leave. And, you know, I've also told this guy, and I don't make this promise to many people, but if he wants to leave Westfield and come live in Wyoming, I'll put him up for a couple weeks. I've made that offer to like three people. You're one of them, Ben. But so I can diss Westfield and offer an out. He lives in Mayville, which is one town over. And I lived there too and got in trouble going to public school there because people were picking on me and bullying me. And I threatened to beat them all senseless, and a teacher heard me and was like, called my dad, and it's like, Michael is very violent. And like, no, there's like four kids twice my size messing with me, and I just turned into a honey badger and got up in their face, and now I'm in trouble. Come on, man.
Yeah, I didn't think Westfield was all that bad, though. I mean, if you have to live in the state of New York, you're probably better in that area than... I mean, you're even close to Fredonia there. How can you complain?
Fredonia. It's not the Fredonia of the Marx Brothers movie. Although the Marx Brothers movie is based on a bad experience they had doing a public performance in Fredonia, New York.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
You're a wealth of information. You know what you were talking about, the filming
break.
Tricks.
Well, during the break, I was talking like when we got done with the Natural Children song and went to the break, you were like, man, that was great. How do you know all this stuff? And I'm like, I know too much stuff and it's all useless except in talk radio, which is why I have found my niche, which is what I was heading toward when I was talking about, books and how I don't really care about writing books anymore. I'd rather do a podcast, man. We can talk for a couple hours and get it out to more people than like my first novel that took 5 years to write and a year to get published. You know, we can do that right now. We're going to do that right now. And it's probably more fun than my first novel, which was a bad time rock and roll book.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Freedom Fiends, now with Funyuns.
Funyuns are delicious.
Funyuns. Sound like you said Funyuns.
Funyuns. Funyuns, Funyuns, Funyuns.
Yep. So the name of today's episode is Impressionable Libertarian Kids in Their College Dorms Love the Freedom Fiends.
That's a, what's his name, McCain reference.
Yeah. He said, he was bitching about Rand Paul, bitching about drones, and basically saying, Rand Paul's only posturing to get the attention of libertarian kids in their college dorm room. And I'm like, man, those guys already all listen to us. We're better. We're better than Rand Paul.
So you mentioned a movie trick that of filming inside an active a church.
Yeah.
Did you ever see the Steve Martin, Eddie Murphy movie Bowfinger?
Yeah, I love that. I saw that. That came out after I did that, or I saw it after I did that. It's really funny, man. It's basically a guy gets an Eddie Murphy lookalike who is played by Eddie Murphy and films an Eddie Murphy film without Eddie Murphy's consent. And the filmmaker's played by Steve Martin. And he's basically doing every scam he can to do it. And that's kind of how I was, but I wasn't committing aggression like that guy is, but it's a really funny movie. And again, you know, that guy was a sociopath. And like our caller said, sociopaths are more interesting than balanced people. I mean, if you did a movie about my life, it'd be pretty boring, but I've got a pretty great life. You know, it would be, you know, a husband and wife sitting in the same room, not talking and just enjoying each other's company and petting the cats and occasionally talking and having a heart to heart, but not planning time to have a heart to heart, but just having them from time to time, isn't that interesting. And in a lot of movies, that would be shown to show, oh, look how this middle-aged couple is. They're boring. They just sit in their living room. But no, man, it's far more interesting. I've had a lot of relationships in the past that would make a great movie. In fact, a lot of them were names changed and put into my first novel and were in that bit of the movie that I filmed, trying to make a movie of it for my first film when we filmed in the church. You know, I had girlfriends that like would try to stab me in my sleep. That's a movie, you know, people just sitting in a living room, having a great time on a Saturday night, being mellow is not a great movie. A chick trying to stab you in your sleep because you slept with someone else, but you told her before you ever slept with her, hey, baby, I'm going to sleep with other people. And she said, cool. And then you did it and she didn't like you and tried to stab you in your sleep. That's a movie, man. But I don't like living a movie anymore. I like living a valuable, mellow life and reaching the world from my bedroom. Now, that's the closing bit here. We're going to talk about the joys of reaching the world from your bedroom. Do you reach out and touch the world in special places from your bedroom, Ben?
Well, I have an office, so yeah.
Then you have a long commute. My commute's only about 5 feet. You have to go into the other room to work.
Yeah, man, it's about 5 feet you. From my office to my room, though. So
yeah, so you got a 10-foot commute, man. You're stuck in traffic.
Terrible, terrible, yeah. Terrible. You know, going back a step, playing seven stages. What is it? Seven steps, 7 degrees of separation from Michael W. Dean.
Yeah,
I forgot this, but Robert Downey Jr. was in Bowfinger also.
Oh yeah, and you know what? He had a car with a Wyoming license plate. He did.
It's a conspiracy.
I think it was. He had his character was a TV. Oh, it was a producer, right?
I think so, if I recall.
Yeah. And the connection is that I did a movie that he narrated, and the only time I ever met a famous person in Hollywood in my 5 years there was directing Robert Downey Jr. doing the voiceover. So, you know, I didn't spend my time networking. I spent my time working. And everyone that spent their time networking to try to go to parties and meet famous people ended up moving back to Ohio, and I made a film. So there. But yeah, his character like had a ranch in Wyoming, and he had this beautiful classic car, and he was always shown driving around, and they show the, it was a Wyoming license plate. I like that.
Yep. Everything comes back to Michael W. Dean within seven steps.
Less.
Less than seven steps.
Everybody's connected by 6 degrees of separation, but I'm connected to everyone by 4 degrees.
So, reaching out and touching the universe from your bedroom.
Yeah. I feel spiritual doing this. This is kind of like my preaching in the church, you know?
Yeah. And you're not even ordained.
No. I'm unlicensed.
Hey, you want me to ordain you?
Right now? Right now?
We probably could. Why not? We can make up our own religion, can't we? This America.
I think I want to know what I'm getting into a little more, and it might take longer than 4 minutes to tell me. Tell me. Well, you can start. What's it entail?
Well, you just swear your allegiance to me and send me money and promise to watch me every Sunday morning.
No.
Can we offend people on this show?
No, but we do. Can you imagine if it were illegal to offend people? There's actually a state rep in Arizona who tried to pass a law against offending people on the internet. That would effectively shut down the internet, or at least make everything. I mean, what's the internet for?
Well, without going into, but without dragging this corpse back up out of the grave again. Uh-oh, there's our sound.
No, it's not a timer.
But without dragging this corpse up out of the grave again, on Facebook not long ago, I was accused of aggression because I told somebody to shut up and go away.
That guy was unclear on the concept, man.
Like saying shut up and go away is aggression? No, those are words.
I mean, his response is kind of like what a lot of liberals are. Liberals generally believe that free speech means it is their right to make you hear their thoughts. That is not free speech. Free speech in the constitutional sense is that the government shall not infringe on your right to speak freely. That doesn't mean that people can't walk away from it. And a lot of liberals misunderstand that. You know what's interesting? Neema and I came up with the term. I realized the other day doing some Google ego surfing that a few terms that the fiends have come up with have become kind of viral. One is "don't drone me, bro." That's in the last scene in the Guns and Weed movie, like 2.5 years ago. And that has become a thing. And that's the first time that term was used. We made it up. The other one is "Constitution Humper," which has been perverted by people who use it. We meant it as people who talk about small government, but believe in the Constitution when they should go all the way to anarchist, that they're basically that they're half measuring or quarter measuring or 10th measuring it. But that term has been picked up by liberals to describe conservatives who stand behind the Constitution and use it to get in the way of the progress that the progressives want, which is basically an initiation of aggression all the way through.
Sad.
Yeah.
So flashing back to dramatic things and from previous lives, an example of aggression would be something like when I bought a debt from a guy. It was like $130 debt or something like that. I bought it for like $10. So then I went over in a drunken stupor one night and busted out the guy's headlights out of his car and threw a rock through his window into his bedroom to collect the $130 or $140 or whatever it was. That was aggression. That would be aggression.
Yeah, that would. And buying a debt, you mean from a loan shark?
Yeah. I don't know the whole circumstances of how the guy owed the other guy money.
Well, Was it aggression, though? I mean, didn't the guy basically orally sign a contract that his debt was sellable?
Yeah, but he didn't. There was nothing that he had done that would justify, you know, costing him several hundred dollars.
Did he know you'd bought his debt, or were you just a crazy guy screaming? Okay, that's a problem there. You should have announced yourself and waived your piece of paper, your contract.
Yeah. I probably could have just approached him and said, "Hey, I know you're late, you know, on your payments. I know you're behind on this. Why don't we work out something? You give me $5. We'll catch back up next week. That would have been a normal thing to do. But I didn't like the guy, and I just went over and had fun with him.
You don't do stuff like that anymore, huh?
No, I was a bad person, and I try not to be a bad person nowadays.
Well, you know, redemption in the third act, the hero's journey. People can change, and they can bring information from that change back to society and share it. And that is what being a hero is. And Ben, I would like to thank you for your service. You do work hard, and you could be just sitting in your garden watching squirrels fornicate, but instead you get on a microphone, which you've said is kind of the last thing you want to do. It makes you nervous to do it. The thought of actually getting on radio makes you really nervous, but you're going to do it one day. And I want to thank you for standing up to your fears. I'm totally not being sarcastic. I'm totally speaking the truth here, man. Thank you for your service, Ben.
I appreciate that, Michael. Thank you, too.
Worms. And it's been a great Freedom Fiends live here with Ben Stone from the Bad Quaker, filling in for Nima Vidotti, who is DJing at a fat Greek wedding today.
Run, Nima, run.
Worms.
Worms, 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 worms.